The Legend of St. Julian the Hospitaller by Gustave Flaubert. Chapter 1. The Curse. Julian's father and mother dwelt in a castle built on the slope of a hill in the heart of the woods. The towers at its four corners had pointed roofs covered with leaden tiles, and the foundation rested upon solid rocks which descended abruptly to the bottom of the moat. In the courtyard, the stone flagging was as immaculate as the floor of a church. Long rain spouts, representing dragons with yawning jaws, directed the water towards the cistern, and on each windowsill of the castle, a basil or a heliotrope bush bloomed in painted flower pots. A second enclosure, surrounded by a fence, comprised a fruit orchard, a garden decorated with figures wrought in bright-hued flowers, an arbour with several bowers, and a mall for the diversion of the pages. On the other side were the kennel, the stables, the bakery, the wine press, and the barns. Around these spread a pasture, also enclosed by a strong hedge. Peace had reigned so long that the portcullis was never lowered. The moats were filled with water, swallows built their nests in the cracks of the battlements, and as soon as the sun shone too strongly, the archer, who all day long paced to and fro on the curtain, withdrew to the watchtower and slept soundly. Inside the castle, the locks on the doors shone brightly. Costly tapestries hung in the apartments to keep out the cold. The closets overflowed with linen. The cellar was filled with casks of wine, and the oak chests fairly groaned under the weight of money bags. In the armoury could be seen, between banners and the heads of wild beasts, weapons of all nations and of all ages, from the slings of the Amalekites and the javelins of the Garamantes to the broadswords of the Saracens and the coats of mail of the Normans. The largest spit in the kitchen could hold an ox. The chapel was as gorgeous as a king's oratory. There was even a Roman bath in a secluded part of the castle, though the good lord of the manor refrained from using it, as he deemed it a heathenish practice. Wrapped always in a cape made from foxskins, he wandered about the castle, rendered justice among his vassals, and settled his neighbours' quarrels. In the winter, he gazed dreamily at the falling snow, or had stories read aloud to him. But as soon as the fine weather returned, he would mount his mule and sally forth into the country roads edged with ripening wheat to talk with the peasants, to whom he distributed advice. After a number of adventures, he took unto himself a wife of high lineage. She was pale and serious, and a trifle haughty. The horns of her headdress touched the top of the doors, and the hem of her gown trailed far behind her. She conducted her household like a cloister. Every morning she distributed work to the maids, supervised the making of preserves and unguents, and afterwards passed her time in spinning or in embroidering altar cloths. In response to her fervent prayers, God granted her a son. Then there was great rejoicing, and they gave a feast which lasted 3 days and 4 nights, with illuminations and soft music. Chickens as large as sheep and the rarest spices were served. For the entertainment of the guests, a dwarf crept out of a pie, and when the bowls were too few, for the crowd swelled continuously, the wine was drunk from helmets and hunting horns. The young mother did not appear at the feast. She was quietly resting in bed. One night she awoke and beheld in a moonbeam that crept through the window something that looked like a moving shadow. It was an old man clad in sackcloth who resembled a hermit. A rosary dangled at his side, and he carried a beggar's sack on his shoulder.